Anne Veronica, newly and precariously independent, was standing on the steps of the Central Imperial College that towered up amongst the back streets of Euston Road and Great Portland Street, holding in one hand a pleading letter from her father to return home, and in the other, the cheque for £40 from her friend Ramage to help pay for her further education, a stepping stone to freedom and liberation. Should she succumb to her father's rather endearing plea and simply tear the cheque up and just go home?
No, I am a human being, not a timid female. I'll see it out.
And so, in January 1909, Anne Veronica was working very steadily on the advanced course in comparative anatomy. Biology throws out broad experimental generalizations and then sets out to bring into harmony an infinitely varied collection of phenomena.
The little streaks upon the germinating area of an egg, the senses of a fish, and the slime upon a sea-wet rock. 10,000 such things bear their witness and are illuminated by bios.
And Anne Veronica in her own person too was this eternal bios, beginning again its recurrent journey to selection and multiplication and failure or survival.
I am studying me, a living form. I will discover my own secrets.
A month later, Anne Veronica realized that she was thinking a lot about her tutor, Capes. His form, his voice.
It's like this,
he says, and drags a stool beside me and sits down with his elbow 4 inches from mine and makes a sketch.
The sunlight catches his face.
And see, the modeling of his ear, the muscles of his neck, and the soft, minute curve of his eyelid.
All right. I'll leave you to it.
Then he gets up and leaves me. And every time this happens, a cavity, an immense absence remains. Something enormously gone. I don't know what it is. No one else leaves such an emptiness behind. What is the matter with me?
Oh, Miss Stanley, you asked me my thoughts on the scientific relevance of beauty.
I did.
There is a science to beauty. One can be a little too mystical about it. Primarily, its intensity of perception, without any tissue damage.
I like the mystical way. A number of beautiful things are not intense.
No, but proportion, rhythm, harmony are slight in themselves, but if you perceive them intensely, vividly, they are like the detonators of a bomb. Vividness of perception is the essential factor. Vividness may be created by a whisper. Boom!
That doesn't explain sunsets.
Yeah, not quite. I throw it out in passing. Beauty isn't a special, inserted sort of something. It's just life. Life nascent, running clear and strong.
Anne Veronica surveyed Capes sloping back for a moment and drew her microscope towards her.
Anne Veronica, love is the matter. Love is what it is. Love.
Anne Veronica Stanley, a biological sciences degree candidate, has also entered the candidacy for love. At this moment, Mr. Capes has been handed a telegram for Anne Veronica. In fetching it over, Capes tries reading it through the thin paper, but is unsuccessful.
Oh, he's coming back.
It seems that this morning I cannot escape your vortices, Miss Stanley. I've just been handed a telegram for you. We're expecting news.
No, it was not, Mr. Capes. It won't be from my father or my Aunt Molly. They're not telegram senders. It's from my friend, bored.
Bored and nothing to do. Will you dine with me tonight somewhere and we can talk? I shall be grateful.
Ramage.
Well, it's been 10 days since we met. I'm ready for a gossip. I'll tell him that I've fallen in love. Love is leaning in upon me like a microscope.
Anne Veronica and Ramage meet at a little restaurant.
Well, Mr. Ramage, I'm brandishing a secret like a teapot about to pour.
Unless that teapot is filled with champagne, my hand is covering the cup. Waiter!
Yes, sir?
Champagne. Nothing else will cheer me up.
Yes, sir.
Whatever is wrong, Mr. Ramage?
I'm unhappy. I'm in love.
You can't be unhappy if you're in love.
How would you know?
Well, as it happens... Oh!
This week I've made an awful lot of money.
If it's about the loan...
Oh, shush, I've made £700.
Exhilarating.
More, actually.
Very exhilarating.
Cheers, my dear. You play games, don't you, Anne Veronica?
I played hockey, tennis, jiu-jitsu.
It was like that.
In what way?
Well, you score. Your score is a number. I scored over £700.
You score love in tennis when you're losing.
Ah.
But I'm sure the trophy's yours. Huzzah.
Drink your champagne. You must, because of my depression.
But why are you depressed?
Oh, you make me doubt there's any validity in feminine instincts. A woman is supposed to know when a man is in love with her. Do you think she does?
Well, yes, she must.
Ah.
He was pushing all sorts of expressions into his protuberant eyes, like soft, wet bubbles.
But perhaps describing some things as a woman's instinct is a way of avoiding explanations.
Yes, but love, Anne Veronica.
Yes, love. When one really wants a thing, one is inclined to imagine that the thing is totally out of reach. I do.
Really? Yes, yes. Well, have you ever been to the opera, Anne Veronica?
Not much.
We'll go right now, then.
Oh, I'm in the mood for music. What's on?
Tristan.
I've never seen Tristan and Isolde.
Oh, well, that's settled. Come along, then.
They took a hansom cab to Covent Garden, where, after sitting rather too close to Anne Veronica, Ramage secured one of the discreet upper boxes, a tiny nook. There on the stage, by the masthead of a barbaric ship, stood Isolde and Tristan. They sang about themselves until King Mark jarred in and the sailors got about their business. After which, the curtains fell at the end of Act One.
This is a commanding sort of love. By God, Anne Veronica, this stirs one. I wish you and I had drunk that love potion.
What they were drinking, was it?
I want life beyond measure. I want love. I want always to be young, to be strong, to be devoting my life, and then, after all that, dying quite splendidly.
It makes me want to see the rest of the opera, to see where it goes.
No, we know where it goes.
The second act of Tristan and Isolde intervened. All during the love music, Anne Veronica could feel Ramage twitching with preparation, extending tentacles like something out of the sea, palpating Isolde under Tristan's directions. Ramage grabbed her wrist.
I love you, Anne Veronica. I love you with all my heart and soul.
Don't. Please release my arm.
Oh, my God, Anne Veronica, my God. Tell me you love me.
This isn't the place. Let go.
I love the soles of your feet.
What?
The tips of your toes, the knob of your knees. I love your very breath. I want you. I worship you. Do you hear me?
If I had realized your intentions, I wouldn't have come.
I can't help it. I must speak. Imagine if Wagner had been told to shut up. What would that have done to him? All this music in his brain, the torment. It's unendurable that I love you.
You have a wife.
No. Yes, I do, but no, I don't. Not where it matters.
Please. Stop no. Now!
All right. Forgive me. And let us talk about this somewhere private. Somewhere we won't be interrupted. Somewhere this can be resolved.
Yes, agreed.
We are friends?
Yes.
Next evening...
We'll go to a place I know which allows one a private room where we can talk things out to our mutual satisfaction.
They went to the Rococo in German Street and up the stairs to a landing where a bald waiter, whiskered like a French rear admiral and as discreet as a ghost in a cobweb, ushered them into a tiny apartment. There were flowers. There was an enormous crimson silk-covered sofa.
Odd little room. What an overbearing sofa.
One can talk without undertones. Oh, and here's the soup and the wine. I'm going to talk of indifferent themes until the interruptions of the service are over, and then we shall be together.
We are together now.
So, what did you think of Tristan?
Well, what I could concentrate on, I thought amazingly beautiful.
Mm. And Wagner wrote it from a brittle little tale because he had fallen impossibly in love with a rich patroness, in spite of all that is respectable and correct and socially right.
All too quickly, the meal was finished and all the waiting staff hurried quietly away, leaving Ramage to lock the door and pocket the key.
Is that necessary?
Now no one can blunder in. We two are alone. We two can say and do as we please. I have waited for this.
Her eyes met his, 4 inches away. A glaring, monstrous animal of an eye.
Then why don't you sit down? Now the waiting is over. Now we can talk.
No, Aunt Veronica.
No, don't! No, no, Mr. Ramage!
Oh, my darling. Kiss!
No! Oh! How dare you!
No, I dare. I must.
I'm warning you. Stop!
Aunt Veronica, an ardent hockey player, a tennis player with a terrific serve, a young woman who had completed a course of jiu-jitsu, swung her fist into the soft flesh just beneath Ramage's jawbone and pressed in her knuckles.
I warned you!
Oh, you vixen!
You cad!
I believe you've crushed a gland.
I thought you wanted to have a talk with me. That's what you said.
I wanted to make love to you. You knew it. Women's intuition, you knew it. Oh, my gland is throbbing. I can't think why you attacked me.
I was defending myself.
It's all pulp in my neck. I dare say I'll need an operation.
I am sorry, but what else could I do?
What is the use of keeping up this note of indignation, Aunt Veronica? Here I am, your lover, burning for you. I mean to have you. No one will love you like I love you.
Stay where you are, Mr. Ramage.
Yes.
I love somebody else.
Why?
I can't love you.
You love somebody else?
So you see, your touch disgusts me. You as a lover, well, I am repulsed. This isn't the friendship I sought.
You love another? You love another man? What, so why the devil do you let me stand you dinners at a box? A box at the opera? And why, Aunt Veronica, did you accompany me here to this cabinet particular?
Is that what they call this?
You have a lover whilst I've been keeping you.
You haven't been keeping me.
£40 of keeping you. £40 handed over for your keep. There is no other way to describe it.
You know that's not what it was. It was a loan. You asked for 5% interest.
I kept you. I have rights. They come with the money.
You have my friendship, which I thought you valued. But right now, Mr. Ramage, I want to get out of this nasty little room. Please unlock the door.
Never. I am going to kiss you. I will kiss you.
You will not.
Mind when you swing your hand.
I'm going.
Why do you think I've been doing things for you?
Friendship.
Friendship?
I looked forward to our chats. I was your friend and presumed you were mine.
And does he, your lover, does he know I keep you? You won't have a man's lips near you, but you'll eat off his plate out of his hand and nibble from his wallet.
Mr. Ramage, you are cruel, outrageous, and you understand nothing, and you're horrible. And you will let me out of this room. There are wine glasses awaiting their fate on your arms.
Oh, no, you will hear me out. This lover of yours...
He doesn't know.
Well, you know. You've sealed yourself off from him by accepting my money.
Mr. Ramage, open the door now. These wine glasses fear for their existence.
I can't let you go like this. You don't understand. I love you. I was so mad I did crude things. Alarming and senseless things.
All right, but please open the door now.
And men do services for women, such as I have done for you and Veronica, and women give of themselves. There was never any friendship on my part. I bought you!
Goodbye, Mr. Ramage.
When Aunt Veronica reached her little bed sitting room again, every nerve in her body was quivering with shame and self-disgust.
Oh, what am I to do? I'm in a hole. I'm in a filthy mess. Do you hear, Aunt Veronica? You're in a filthy, nasty little mess. And all the £40. £40! Then I haven't got 20 left. This is what becomes of a young, up-to-date woman. I'm beginning to have my doubts about freedom. All the smeariness of the thing, mauled about, rubbed, gripped and grappled with. He's blobbed my lips with his smeariness. Rubbed them raw. Ugh. I wish somebody would kill Ramage by accident.
After barely an hour's sleep, Ann Veronica went out with her post office savings bank book, telegraphed for a warrant to draw out all the money she had in the world. It amounted to £22. And then she addressed an envelope to Ramage and scrawled,
"The rest will follow,"
on half a sheet of paper. She would keep £2 back so that she could continue at her lodgings for a little while longer and eat very frugally.
£20 returned means he has to relinquish his grip. He has to let go of me. With one of his hands, at least.
For a time that day, the biological laboratory was full of healing virtue. Here was Capes, the man she loved, untainted.
This is a very good drawing of the nucleotides.
Oh, he's so close. I'm a little breathless. Decorum, Ann Veronica, decorum. I don't want to be a female Ramage and find myself unable to resist touching his hand. Ah, but he doesn't see me as a woman. I'm a fee-paying student. Oh, and who gave you the fee?
After Capes went through her work, it came to Ann Veronica that the fabric of her life was collapsing. She saw it dyed in carmine and saw how the filaments had thinned and erupted, as though her own body was a net through which her essence was trickling away.
Women need such a lot to make up for how they've been undermined. I suddenly feel myself to be a fleck, sublimated to a vortex made by a man, stirring and stirring with his teaspoon, watching how I fly about, waiting till I've almost settled before twisting me back into the general twirl of his entertainment.
Are you going to come for some tea, Miss Stanley?
Oh, yes, Miss Garvis.
Oh, you have a Votes for Women handbill.
It's something to speculate about.
Ah, Mr. Capes, tea?
Ah, yes, please.
No, women are not made for the great struggle and turmoil of life. Women should understand men's affairs, but not interact. We play the better part by influencing rather than reacting with them.
I cannot agree.
I do agree, Miss Garvis. It's probably not just or fair, but it's how things currently stand. Men are all in a scramble. Women should be in the beautiful recesses, the niche in which the future shelters, the home.
A little pit, a little prison.
Yeah, just as often a refuge. That is how things are. Balfour Beck suggests that legally men are under the heel of women. He advocates rights for men.
And the man stands as the master at the mouth of the cave.
He does.
A sentinel, a captor.
Ah, you forget all the massive training and tradition and instinct that go to make him a tolerable master. Nature is a mother, and her sympathies have always been feminist, and she has tempered the man to the shorn woman.
I wish you could know what it's like to live in a pit. Well, I can't endure it.
Oh?
No man can realise what that pit can be. The way we are led on. We are taught to believe we're free in the world.
Well, we are.
We find out that no man will treat a woman as fairly as man to man. No man will. He wants you or he doesn't.
That is probably true, Miss Stanley, and necessary.
Think of the mockery. Think how we're stifled. I know we seem to have a freedom, but Mr. Capes, have you ever tried to run and jump in a skirt? Well, think what it must be like to live in them. These skirts. Soul and mind and body all hampered. Then men laugh at us.
I wasn't jesting.
Nor was I. All this, I can't endure it. Good afternoon. That was my refuge. That was my niche away from the world. That was my career. Capes stood at the entrance, only because I had installed him there. Now I want air. I want moving and changing things about me. I want to know nothing for the rest of the day. So I'll keep moving. I will walk. I will walk till I am no longer in a rage.
And Ann Veronica set off from Primrose Hill to Hampstead Heath.
Miss Stanley!
Miss Garvis.
Oh, I thought it was you, Miss Stanley. Oh, I'm glad I've happened upon you. Do you go across the park?
I don't normally, but right now I just want space and air.
I'll walk with you. That is, if you don't mind.
Please do.
Did you leave because of Mr. Capes?
No, not because of him. I've quite a headache.
After you went, he took refuge in the preparation room.
Did he? Did my words do that to him?
He has a habit, a way, of sitting on people. He jumps on the words out of your mouth before you have a chance to express it properly. I suppose he's frightfully clever. He must only be around 30, already a fellow of the Royal Society. He must have married when he was very young.
Married?
Yes. Didn't you know?
I didn't. It doesn't show.
I thought you knew. We all knew.
No. Why do you all know?
He's separated from his wife. He may be divorced. There was a big scandal. He almost lost his job. I wouldn't have mentioned it, but I thought you knew.
I suppose all men get some entanglement. And anyhow, it doesn't matter to us. This is my way back now. Good night, Miss Garvis.
Oh, I thought we were walking together across the park.
Ann Veronica was sitting brooding over her fire at about 10 o'clock that night, when a sealed and registered envelope was brought to her by her landlady.
Thank you.
My dearest girl, I cannot let you do this foolish thing.
Well, you have no say, Ramage. Now I shall throw your note onto the fire and... Yes, he returned all the money I sent. Here are the two £10 notes. Well, goodbye to my fetters. Into the fire with the lot of you. Oh, no. The money. I can't burn that. I can't afford to. It's gone. Well, that about finishes it, Ann Veronica. There is only one way out of this. I thought I was just up against Morningside Park, but it turns out I am up against the whole world and the order of things. Life is about chance if you're a man. It's about what you're allowed to keep or act on of chance if you're a woman. What are my choices? What if I married Mr. Manning? He worships me, apparently. Would he allow me air to breathe and a life of my own? No, men are not a solution. Men are not a means to an end.
The Women's Bond of Freedom. The lettering's neat. I like that. Now, where are they? Ah, upstairs, first floor. Hello, I want to inquire...
Suffragettes, next door.
Next door, thank you.
Oh dear, is this it? She does look rather tired. I hope it isn't a symptom of suffrage. She's only young.
Right.
Hello?
Hello. Are you with us?
I don't know. I think I am. But I want to know what you're doing.
My name is Kitty Brett. I hope you haven't come to make difficulties.
Ann Veronica, I just want to know.
What can you do?
Do?
Can you distribute bills? Write letters? Interrupt meetings? Canvass at elections? Face dangers?
If I am satisfied.
If we satisfy you?
Then, if possible, I would like to go to prison.
It isn't nice going to prison.
It would suit me.
It isn't nice getting there.
That's a question of detail.
What are your objections?
Not objections. I just want to know what you're doing. How you think what you do serves women.
We are working for the equal citizenship of men and women. Women have been treated as inferior. We want to make them equals.
One doesn't want to turn the whole thing into a mere sex antagonism.
When women get justice, there will be no sex antagonism. None at all. Until then, we mean to keep on hammering away.
It seems to me that many of a woman's difficulties are economic.
That will follow. That will follow.
I suppose.
Nothing was ever done without a certain element of faith. After we've got the vote and are recognised as citizens, then we can come to all these other things. The vote is the symbol of everything. This is the one movement that brings all women together, irrespective of class, and all for a common purpose. It has given women souls.
Very well. Give me something to do. I don't want to stand and talk any longer. I want to hammer myself against all the pens in women. I shall stifle if I don't do something soon. I cannot endure it.
Then I shall list you for the raid.
The raid?
A raid upon the House of Commons. Go along to 14 Dexter Street, Westminster. and on no account ask a policeman to direct you there. I will be joining you shortly. For the raid!
Half an hour later.
Oh, 14 Dexter Street. This is it. It's a yard belonging to Podgers and Carlo, carriers and furniture removers. Oh, here comes another circumspect woman. I must be in the right place. I'll follow her.
The other circumspect woman entered through a small door, and Ann Veronica followed her into a large cobbled yard, lit by insufficient gaslights and filled with four large furniture vans with horses. The women who had already gathered were each given a small slip of paper. Ann Veronica said,
D. Oh, I see. Each of these vans is either A, B, C, or D. It's to make sure we don't all cram into the same vehicle for an equal distribution of troops. This is exactly like Troy.
Get into your allocated van, please.
A man's marshalling us. Surely Kitty Brett could have organised a woman marshal just to set things off.
When the vans reach the House of Commons entrance, they will stop. Three raps upon the door. Out you come, but don't bunch together. Hey, you will be dropped by the public entrance. Get into the lobby and try and reach the floor of the house. Remember, when the moment presents itself, you must shout, Votes for Women!
Well, this should cause some provocation. If I'm not in a police cell by evening, I shall be very disappointed.
The women were set down beside the august seat of empire. They emerged from the valiantly impertinent vans, a struggling rush of ominous, somberly dressed and determined women, women at war with the universe. Anne Veronica was at their very forefront as they entered the House of Commons.
The expectant calm of Westminster is ended.
Fights for women! Fights for women!
Then, most horribly, Anne Veronica was clasped about the waist from behind and lifted from the ground. She had never experienced anything so disagreeable in her life.
Put you on the pavement outside this! Come on, that's it!
Put me down! Put me down!
Now, you be off now, Missy. This ain't no place for you. Go on, get along.
No! No!
That's it. Now, off home with you.
I won't go home. I won't!
Hey, 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 steady on. No shoving back now. Come on.
You have to take me.
I'm warning you. That's it. Right.
And Anne Veronica was arrested.
Well, Anne Veronica...
Smith.
I can't imagine what your parents must be thinking to let you get into these scrapes. I doubt you know the derivation of the word suffrage. And you're a good-looking, strong, respectable girl. And it's a pity you silly young women can't find something better to do with your exuberance.
And your silly man's attitude is exactly the reason I'm here in the first place.
So, Anne Veronica Smith... Your choice of punishment is either to be bound over in one surety for the sum of £40...
There it is again. £40. That seems to be the selling price of a woman.
Yes, £40. Or a month's imprisonment.
Prison, please. I'd like to go to prison.
Prison was beastly. Bathed in somebody else's dirty bath water, her body washed by a wardress since they didn't seem to trust her to wash herself, and then given an ex-inmate's dirty clothes to wear. Even the underwear she was issued bore the stains of other wearers. Having known what small and busy life forms any kind of detritus nurtured, having watched them proliferate in mere moments beneath a microscope, Anne Veronica felt her skin crawl as the small elements began to colonize. The cell, too, was filthy. Not the white-tiled, spotless niche she'd been expecting, but a veritable pit. Grey ochre with human sweat and human grease. A mop and bucket had not passed that way for at least 10 years. A young woman in the next cell to her was noisy and enthusiastic. It was Kitty Brett.
Be silenced!
Miss Brett?
All right. Who's that?
Miss Smith. Anne Veronica. Your newest recruit.
Well, you wanted imprisonment. How are you liking it?
I wouldn't mind it, but for the dirt. I must put everything in order.
What needs sorting, Miss Smith?
what I do when I leave prison. I'm inclined to go back home.
And take the battle with you?
And, yes, perhaps. But I think I will need to sign some kind of truce.
Don't give up our fights.
I shan't. It's just that I may have to be a little clandestine about it. I've hurt my father, my Aunt Molly. I've made no one happy.
Don't be too hard on yourself. We are the oppressed.
Mm. Yes.
Good night, Miss Smith. Is that your real name? Smith?
No, it's Stanley.
Ann Veronica endured many long and sleepless nights in prison.
I'll write to my father. I'll go home. There's no alternative. Not now I understand what men mean by friendship. I'm not giving up. Retreat, reconvene, amass the wherewithal. Oh, what is a wherewithal? I'll find my wherewithal and install myself in a future with comparative anatomy at its core and a great parade of wonders. My dear father, I have been thinking hard about everything since I was sent to prison. All these experiences have taught me a great deal about life and realities. I see that compromise is more necessary to life than I ignorantly supposed it to be.
1 month later...
Free again!
Aunt Molly! Aunt Molly! Is that you in that veil? Oh,
yes, dear. Oh, I'm afraid I'm all caught up in this...
A victory parade! Oh, how lovely to see you.
Ann Veronica's Aunt Molly, being a little confused about what was official and what was merely a rebellious slight upon our national justice, found herself involved in a triumphal procession by open wagonette to the Vindicator Vegetarian restaurant and was specifically and personally cheered by a small crowd outside the rendezvous. They eventually reached home in the early afternoon after settling things at Ann Veronica's lodgings.
We must never let your father know we went to the Vindicator Vegetarian restaurant in a great triumph of law-breaking.
It was very tiring.
We'll have buttered toast and tea. Your poor cheeks are quite sunken. Pinch them for colour before you speak to your father.
Both father and daughter had dropped the initial rather elaborate politeness they had exchanged over the dinner table. Now both faces wore almost identical lines of willfulness and a certain hardness that made every compromise a bargain and every charity a discount.
And so you have been thinking?
Yes, father.
Well, I wish you'd thought about all these things before these bothers began.
One has to live and learn.
As long as you learn.
I suppose you've no objection to my continuing to study at Imperial College?
Not if it will keep you busy.
The fees are paid till the end of the session, and the work's essential for the BSc exam.
As long as you keep in harmony with home.
Being away from home has cost money.
I thought you would find that out.
I did. In fact, Daddy, I got a little into debt.
Never.
Well, lodgings and things. I left with nothing. Then I had to pay my fees at college. I couldn't find work. If I'd had worked as a seamstress for threepence an hour, I'd have had to sew without sleep for a year to be able to afford the cost of studying. Besides, my landlady kept all my room while I was in prison.
Your Aunt Molly said that you had some money.
I pawned my pearl necklace and my watch.
Oh.
And I borrowed. I had to.
Who from?
The Widgets.
So you advertised our difficult relations pretty generally.
They knew anyway, because of the dance.
How much do you owe?
£15.
I'll pay it, but I do hope this is the end of your adventures. Nobody can do what they like in this world. Everywhere there are limitations.
I have learnt that lesson, Father.
Yeah.
£15? Where will I find the other 25?
Ah, well, that's good.
Well, here goes for the new life.
Here goes for the new life.
The chance had gone. She needed £40. She had lied to her father and she was to have £15 and no more. It was impossible to return anything less than the full amount to Ramage.
I shouldn't have burnt that £20. I should have sent it straight back to Ramage. Now he'll think I kept it and on his terms. His terms. And tomorrow I shall see Capes again with all this scattered like debris between us. And he's married. He had all this debris, and I couldn't see it.
Anne Veronica opened the door and breathed in the distinctive smell of the comparative anatomy laboratory. Reagents, preserving alcohol, and books warmed by sunlight and by electric light, and over the books flickered small motes like stray thoughts or the ghosts of nucleotides.
I expected you this morning.
I think it is very good of me to come this afternoon.
I began to be afraid you might not come at all.
Afraid?
Yes. I'm glad you're back for all sorts of reasons. I didn't understand you were so keenly interested in the suffrage question. I offended you.
When?
I was rude and stupid. We were talking about the suffrage and I rather scoffed.
Veronique!
She's coming on, Miss Garvis. You're altering us all. The campaign's a success. A man is so apt to take a woman a little too lightly unless they remind him now and then not to, and you did.
Then I didn't waste my time in prison altogether.
Oh, to think you were going to do it and never said a word. You are a little thin, but except for that, you look better than ever. Was it very horrible? I tried to get to the police court, but the crowd was ever so big.
I don't think you saw me, but I was waiting your triumphant release in the Vindicator Vegetarian restaurant.
You were? Where?
I saw you.
How could I not have seen you?
It was a very busy room.
If only I had seen you.
There were too many speeches being given to have been able to chat, but I was there. I wanted to be there.
She loved capes, and he was now extremely interested in her. But he was married, and she was determined not to damage what they had, which was an entire and lovely friendship. That evening, Anne Veronica stepped out of her second-class compartment of the train and saw Ramage emerge from first class a little ahead of her.
No! Miss Stanley! Miss Stanley!
Mr. Manning!
Out of relief, thankful from being shielded from Ramage, Anne Veronica smiled at Mr. Manning, and Mr. Manning's radiation increased.
Oh, I missed the hour of your release, but I was at the Vindicator Vegetarian restaurant. You did not see me. I was among the common herd in the place below, but I took great care to see you.
Of course. You're converted?
Oh, yes. All those splendid women ought to have the vote. Rather. May I walk with you?
Rather. And let us discuss how women might secure an equality of life.
Which is the topic of the hour, Miss Stanley.
And the brightness capes had diffused over the world glorified his rival. And Anne Veronica found that she liked Manning extremely and determined to become engaged to him through the prompting of a medley of motivations that were at war in her.
Did you think of me during your dark hours?
You were a glimmer, Mr. Manning.
Like Tennyson's The Gleam.
More like the glimmer of a tennis ball, lobbed at me by your obliging serve.
Tennis?
Tennis, yes. I imagined you and I were playing tennis. There was really very little else to do except imagine, so I imagined we had endless games of tennis.
Oh, well, let us make those saving glimmers a reality. Let us have our games of tennis, Miss Stanley, if you so wish.
Anne Veronica arranged for the match to take place the following day on the trim courts that her father had installed in the garden.
Ooh. Game, set, and match, Miss Stanley.
We've only played one game, Mr. Manning.
And all the rest of the games we will play are curled up in its core, like an acorn housing a great oak. And you deserve a crown of oak leaves.
I've committed faults, Mr. Manning. Stumbled over the line, lost my balance.
Well, as have we all. Oh, let us sit down for a moment. Love all. Or is it one love,
You once asked me to be engaged to you, Mr. Manning.
I still want to lay all my life at your feet.
I don't love you.
Well, perhaps that love is only sleeping. How can you know?
I think I'm a cold-blooded person, and you have been very kind to me.
I would give my life for you.
Anne Veronica warmed towards Manning. He was courteous. Life would be very good with his kindliness and sacrifice about her. His chivalry would leave her free to live her own life. He would rejoice with infinite generosity in every detail of her irresponsive being. She would never love him as she loved Capes, of course, but there are grades and qualities of love.
It seems unfair to take all you offer and give so little in return.
Well, we are not traders looking for equivalents.
You know I do not really want to marry you.
No.
I feel so unworthy.
Well, I'm the judge of that.
Would you wait for me?
As my lady wills.
Would you let me go on studying for a time?
If you order patience.
It is so difficult.
You like me?
I'm grateful to you.
And we played so many sets of tennis in your imagination when you were in prison.
And that, of course.
Oh, you are the most perfect, the most glorious of created beings. Tender, frank, intellectual, brave, beautiful, like Pallas Athene. You are all the slender goddesses, and I am your servitor. Oh, let us be engaged. Well, let me engage myself. That is all I ask.
You are too good for me.
Oh, then you will?
Yes.
Oh, I have to stand up, or I shall shout. Oh, let us walk about. Da 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 da, da 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 da. Da. Oh, may I seal our future bliss with a kiss?
Don't.
Oh, forgive me, but I'm at singing pitch.
Then why not sing?
Oh, wait till the sun shines, Nelly. When the clouds go drifting by, we will be so happy, Nelly. Don't you sigh?
When Anne Veronica renewed her attendance at the Imperial College, the third finger of her left hand was adorned with a very fine old ring with dark blue sapphires, a Manning family heirloom.
I have been sitting at my microscope and angling my hand so that the sapphires in my new engagement ring twinkle like several planet Venuses ascendant in the night sky. Would you say that men are blind to rings? Then give me strength to pursue a more emphatic course of action. Here's Capes now. Courage.
Mr. Capes, are these ordinary sapphires? Let me slip off my ring. Here.
I'm generally ignorant of gems. Is it an old ring?
Yes. It's an engagement ring.
Odd. Yeah, I suppose I ought to congratulate you. The fact is, Well, this takes me by surprise. You go to prison as a suffragette. Now, this, I hadn't connected the idea with you. Let me take you for a cup of tea in the zoological gardens.
Now?
Now. We can, as friends, ponder a point of morphological interest about the toucan's bill. We can also discuss the comparative morphology of love into friendship. For we are only in the dawn of the age of friendship when interests, I suppose, will take the place of passion.
He said more than a little insincerely, if only she'd known it. They watched the chimpanzees in the new apes' house.
Oh, look at its wonderful leaps and somersaults.
Yes, I wonder which of us enjoys that most, does he or we?
He seems to get a zest. It is very good to be alive.
It's better to know life than to be life.
One can do both.
Let's go see the warthog.
2 days later, at the Imperial College laboratory, just as Capes was going through some perplexities of the metaphysical treatment of the skulls of Hyrax and a young African elephant, Manning arrived. Anne Veronica's ring ceased to be the symbol of liberty and began to assume the token of her biggest life blunder.
Manning.
I want to take you out to tea.
I'm just cleaning up.
Look at all your dreadful scientific things. Wish I understood more of biology, or you understood less.
Right, I'm ready now.
Although Capes had failed to notice Anne Veronica's engagement ring until she took it off to show him, he could not avoid her fiancé's towering, portentous, eager, shapely, handsome body and its great, controlling, exclusive proprietorship of Anne Veronica. Capes made his way to the preparation room and shut the door.
Damn! Damn, 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 damn! The fool I have been! Ass! Damned ass!
muck-headed moral ass. I ought to have done anything. I should have done something. What's a man for? Friendship? The age of friendship! See? See, I've smashed up weeks' worth of work, and that's nothing. Nothing! I've smashed up my lifetime. My lifetime. My last possible chance.
Well, here, too. By the window. I suppose we have nothing to talk about. But we can sit as models for a painting. I shall show you off, my slender goddess.
I'm anything but a goddess, you know.
Oh, you are to me. You can't imagine what you are to me and what you mean to me.
I think you don't realize that I'm a defective human being.
Well, they say there are spots on the sun. Not for me. It warms me and lights me and fills my world with flowers.
I think it would be useful for you to see my faults.
Nonsense. I don't believe them. They are just a joyous softening of the outline. More beautiful than perfection.
She realized she was just a mannequin for her lover's imagination, and that he cared no more for the realities of her being, for the things she felt and desired, than a child cares for the sawdust in its doll. She was the actress his whim had chosen to play a passive part. It was one of the most educational disillusionments in Ann Veronica's career. Suddenly, the thought of Capes flooded her being like sunlight breaking through clouds.
Mr. Manning, I have a confession to make.
I wish you'd use my Christian name.
Ann Veronica realized that she didn't know what it was. She had never thought to ask.
I don't think our engagement can go on.
Well, how not go on? You mean to marry me sooner?
No. No, I thought it was a possible arrangement. I did think it could be done. I admired your chivalry.
Go on.
I don't love you.
Oh, that's old news.
Mr. Manning, I love someone else.
I feel I've been shot. My God!
Shh, shh.
My God! You don't understand that, Veronica. This shatters my world. Why did you ever let me love you? Why did you let me peep through the gates of paradise? Is this a joke of yours?
No.
My God!
He's married. Nothing will come to pass. But I love him with no room to love another.
I'm taking this calmly now because I'm a little stunned. But tell me, has this man dared to make love to you?
I wish he had.
Oh, I would grab him by the throat. And this doesn't seem to me to be the end of things. I'm persistent. I'm like the dog you turn out of a room who will wait at the door for the next opportunity to be let in again. That's me. And this is my prophecy. I will make you love me until he has faded into memory.
No, 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 I'm sorry, but this is the end. And if this appears to be cruel, I think it would have been far crueler for us to continue.
Wait. I see. Can I have my ring back?
What?
The engagement ring. It's a family heirloom.
Ah, yes, of course. Here.
Thank you.
Ah, hello, Miss Stanley. Was that your fiancé?
No, Miss Garvis. I, too, had mistaken him for a fiancé, but it turns out that he is not.
Ah, I see. Mr. Capes is in the preparation room. After you left, he... Well, you see for yourself. He's still cleaning up.
Cleaning up? Oh, Mr. Capes! What a mess!
Ah, Miss Stanley, yes, I had an accident. A few accidents, in fact.
Mr. Capes, what is the use of pretending? I have broken off my engagement. It's a bother and disturbance, but...
Yeah, I thought you weren't keeping up to the mark.
But you see, I've fallen in love. I mean, not with the man I was engaged to.
I see.
Do you?
What do you want?
You.
You don't know much about me.
Something, not much.
You know about my scandalous past?
Nothing more than that. That it's scandalous. It doesn't seem to matter.
No, it does, and profoundly. I was in the divorce court as a co-respondent. You understand that term?
I read novels.
To know things by name is one thing. To know them by living them is different. That is where life takes advantage of youth. You don't understand.
Perhaps I don't, then.
And the difficulty is that if I told you the facts, you'd explain the whole business as being fine and honourable for me. The higher morality, it wasn't.
I don't deal in higher things, or lower for that matter. I don't classify. Flesh and flowers are all alike to me. Go on.
I married young. I loved my wife. We were happy at first, but I don't think she ever loved me back as I did her. Well, after a while there came a fever in my blood. These things aren't supposed to happen. They leave them out of the novels. My poor wife. You women are reared so differently. The spirit of physical love, of eros, is subdued, if not destroyed in so many of you. Yeah, I formed a relationship elsewhere. I committed adultery with the wife of a friend. Was shabby, stupid, furtive. And my friend found out. He divorced his unfaithful wife. How do you like that story?
It is as it is. How can I like or dislike it?
My wife insisted on a separation. She has money of her own. There was no squabble. Only one doesn't go about with those passions allayed simply because they have made a wreckage and scandal. One has a craving in one's blood, roused and cut off from its emotional side, and a man has more freedom to do evil than a woman. I am unromantic and vicious. It isn't what I've been, but what I am. My honor is in my scientific work and public discussion and the things I write. Lots of us are like this, smirched, damaged goods for the sort of lovemaking that you presume. I've muddled it. I've lost my chance. You're as clean as fire.
Well?
You must think it over. We shall be the best friends in all the world, whatever you decide.
I know. I have thought this through endlessly. And I want you. I want you for a lover. I will take the bow from Eros and fire it at you myself.
You are just necessary to life for me. We can't marry.
I don't care if we marry. Scandal. There is no scandal for a pair of comparative anatomists. No high nor low. One studies nature so as not to be ruled by her. Dare.
I dare. Blood of my heart.
My love, we shall have life like the sky. I have never felt so absolutely right. Oh, there is one thing. Sorry.
What's that, my darling?
You'll need to lend me £40.
4 years and 3 months later, Mr. and Mrs. Capes stood on their old hearth rug, lit by shaded electric lights.
Here they are.
Ready?
Do you know, I've never seen my father dining out before. I have never been able to think of him as an equal until now.
Ah, they will look so much smaller to you. Will you be the one to tell them you are expecting our child?
Oh, yes. I've been rehearsing it. Plain saying seems best. I shall go, Father, you are to be a grandfather. Aunt Molly, a great aunt. And then I'll pause and watch whilst the news takes effect and they take measure of a brighter, bigger world. And
they can't fail to see how well you look.
I do, don't I?
Father!
Veronica.
Aunt Molly.
Hello, my dear.
The dinner was an admirable success. From the clear golden soup to the very sound port wine into which Mr. Stanley stared, as if to advance his thoughts.
But now our guests are gone. The great dears.
It's odd. They've changed. And to think we might have given it up for them. And when I told her, Aunt Molly said, whatever you do, look after your hair.
Oh, V, my love. Oh, what is it?
I will have to fight again and again, but I shall be a loving mother, and I shall be myself, and I will not subside. I want life like the sky, and the common things and the secondary things shan't overwhelm me.
Blood of my heart. I understand.
Anne Veronica was Amy Hoggart. The narrator, H.G. Wells, was Bill Nighy. Mr. Stanley, Geoffrey Whitehead. Mr. Ramage, Jonathan Keeble. And Aunt Molly and Miss Garvis was Ruth Alexander Rubin. Mr. Manning was Toby Haydock. Kitty Brett, Verity Henry. And Mr. Capes, Henry DeVath. Anne Veronica, by H.G. Wells, was dramatised by Lavinia Murray and directed in Salford by Pauline Harris.